Welcome to the Alcoholic Addiction Podcast. My name is Lee Davey. I'm not an alcoholic. I refuse to be anonymous. I'm someone that doesn't drink alcohol. I spend every waking moment of my life helping other people do the same. Like right now, I am going to do a solo episode back to the good old monologue days because I haven't pulled my finger out of my buttocks and got a guest. We've got a lot of guests in the pipeline, but we haven't been chasing them up very well. I've been very busy moving over to Los Angeles. That's no excuse. So I need to give you some content. So I'm going to do a monologue episode. Send me an email, actually, at thetruthaboutalcohol@gmail.com if you like this episode, if you think it was worth it. Because if it was, I'll do more of them. Because it has a specific nature, this one. I'm going to be talking about triggers and a particular trigger that happened on Strive. Before we get to that, I'm just going to do a little bit of housekeeping a little bit. On Sunday, the 1st of September, we changed at Strive. We became the new Strive. What does that mean? Well, it just means that we started to charge people £40 a month for a monthly subscription. Before you go, fucking hell, £40 a month, this is daylight robbery. It's not really, is it? 40 quid is nothing. I mean, what did I do the other day? I took a £25 Starbucks card for the week. You know, gone in a week. You know, what's that? £100 on coffee and tea. So £40, I think, is very, very reasonable myself. But it is an amount that makes you think about your future. It makes you think about, well, do I really want to be committing myself to Strive? Because it's 40 quid a month, right? I can, you know, buy whatever I want. I can buy, I don't know. I haven't bought drink for so long. 4 bottles of wine? I don't know. So it is an investment. It's really important. And the reason that we did it is because we're not getting enough people taking our experiences. The taster and the intensive. The taster was £100. The intensive was £1,000. We weren't getting enough people through there taking them. And I think it was the money that was the problem. Now, you can come into Strive. You can join for £40 a month. You can take a look at all the quality work we have here. And if you like it, you can continue paying your £40 a month. If you don't like it, you can bugger off and disappear. And that way, you're able to look at, you know, what was ostensibly a £1,000 experience. You can look at it for 40 quid and see what you think about it. It was a difficult transition because there was a few of our core members who decided they didn't want to pay the £40, so they couldn't remain a member of Strive. I'll always be indebted to them for growing Strive. I love all of them. I'm hoping that some of them in the future will come back and realize that Strive is not a place where we simply help people to stop drinking alcohol, to quit alcohol. We're a place that creates people who don't drink alcohol. And I think that's a very different thing. You know, I think this is a lifetime gig. I think that rather than be a place where we say to people, oh, this is where you go to make friends. This is where you go to belong. This is where you go to create deep, meaningful relationships, that we actually create them on Strive, right? And for me, deep, meaningful relationships, they're for life. They're not like, you don't want to get rid of those things. So Strive is for life. So I'm hoping some of those people come back and realize that. That'd be pretty cool. New Strive. If you want to join for £40 a month, you get access to the taster, get access to the intensive. We're always going to continue to create value in terms of coaching products all the time. We're hoping to get more people in doing coaching products, not just myself. We've got John and Vinny. If you've listened to Alcohol Addiction Podcast regularly, you'll know John was on here, has been a previous guest, so is Vinny. John's going to be doing some group coaching for free on anxiety. Vinny's going to be doing some group coaching for free on trauma. All right, so they're going to be the residential Strive coaches, and we'll hopefully build upon that as we go forward. We're also going to have 4 ambassadors, Nikki, Laurie, Craig, and Stella. Just want to say thank you very much, you 4, for standing up and saying, yeah, I am going to be a striving bastard. So sort of, mate, the work that goes into being an ambassador and the commitment that goes into it is vital for Strive to exist. So thanks for those four lovely people. And then moving forward, we're going to try and have a ratio of one ambassador to 10 strivers. And every single one of those ambassadors, they started out as a striver. And that's the way that we want to do things moving forward, okay? So we're going to have online group meetings. We're going to try to create more live group meetings. It's a brilliant place to be. So if you want to come, go over to thetruthaboutalcohol.co.uk and you'll be able to sign up there. Okay. I want to say happy birthday to Lisa. I won't tell you what her age is, but she's had a wonderful, she's been a real integral part of Strive. And, Lisa's one of the people who's decided to not leave permanently, but have a little break. And she says she's going to come back when she's ready. I hope that's not too long, because we love her. And she's done a lot of work helping a lot of people. But happy birthday, Lisa. Finally, if you want to watch the Alcohol Addiction Podcast and not just listen to it, then go to our YouTube channel. Just Google Lee Davey YouTube and you'll be able to watch this. A beautiful, pristine, chiseled jaw talking to a lot of other people who are not as good looking as me. You know, you just check it out, leedavidyoutube.com, get over to it. So now we're going to get into this. Right, at Strive, we have a forum, you know, and part of that forum is the trigger category. Now, what is a trigger? So a trigger is, let's say you're someone who has decided to try to not drink alcohol, right? So you decided you're not going to drink alcohol anymore. You do really well. You've gone for 7 days. You haven't really thought about it. You're banging. You think you've cracked it. And on Saturday night, your mate asks you to go to the pub. And you think, well, I can nail this. I've been listening to Lee's podcast. I know alcohol has no value, that alcoholism is an invisible, violent, dominant belief system. I've got this. So you go out to the pub on Saturday night and all your mates start taking the piss, they start ridiculing you, and all of a sudden the resistance starts popping up in your mind and you start thinking about having a drink, right? You feel a real urge to have a drink. That is a trigger. It's an example of a trigger, okay? And if we didn't have triggers, then giving up drinking would be a piece of cake. It's the triggers that is the issue. That is the problem, right? And this is the reason why we have to change our belief system around alcohol and understand that alcoholism is an invisible, violent, dominant belief system. That allows us to become trigger-free because it removes the essence of value, right? So whenever you're having a trigger, you're thinking to yourself that alcohol has value. All right. So the way that we deal with this at Strive is we encourage people every time they have a trigger to go onto Strive into the trigger category and answer 11 questions. Right. And these questions are describe the trigger in brief. What time is it? What day was it? Where was I when I had the trigger? What was I doing before the trigger? Who was I with? How was I feeling emotionally? What perceived value did I believe alcohol would provide at this moment? Why is that perceived value an illusion? What could I do differently? And how do you feel now? Okay. And the reason to put these triggers out there is because by the time you've got to Strive and you start doing the work at Strive and you've gone a couple of days without drinking, there is no alcohol left in your body, right? There is no biological addiction alcohol. It's all psychological, okay? You think that alcohol has value, ergo, therefore it does, right? So the way that we try to break this down is by isolating individual triggers and then really running those triggers through the lens of rationality and logic, whilst respecting and understanding that emotions has a massive, massive impact on the trigger. Probably 95% of the reason that we drink is emotions. We don't lose fact of the emotions, and we try to respond to these trigger posts with a good slavering of empathy. But ultimately, it's about putting your decision under a microscope so you can see where the truths and the lies are within the statements that resistance has been throwing up in order for you to have a drink, right? So we had one this week from Kim, okay? So I'm going to go through briefly and then I'm going to dissect it a little bit and tell you what I think about it. So Kim was at the races, all right? She was at the races working behind a bar serving drinks, okay? So she's someone that doesn't drink alcohol. She'd been doing the work at Strive for a long time, and then she decided to go to the races working behind a bar serving drinks to help fundraise for a volunteer group that she was a member of, okay? She was serving mostly beers, didn't feel like there was an effect on her at all. However, and she hadn't been triggered for a couple of months prior to taking on this role as an emergency bar staff for a volunteer group. And she says that the trigger came when someone asked if she had any sparkling wine, right? Sparkling white. And she didn't think there would be any because usually the wine selection is limited at this race meet. So she opened the fridge door to check anyway, and she was surprised that there was a few bottles of expensive sparkling wine there. She was a little bit taken back, right? And then she said that all of a sudden this feeling swept over her that she would like to have a drink of this sparkling wine. So much so that she even considered taking a bottle and going to hide and having a drink. Eventually, she pulls herself together. She tells the other people that she's working with, the other bar staff, that she needs to leave, and then she goes home. Okay, she didn't drink when she went home, and she kind of brushed it off as a non-declarative memory, right? Like just this hard wire, a part of her neurological system that just automatically says, have a drink when you see wine, because that's what she's done for a majority of her life. But subconsciously, the thought stayed with her, and then she drank a week or so later on, okay? So that's what she was saying. What was she doing before the trigger? She was serving drinks, and she says she was quite bored because the crowd wasn't that big, and she was thinking about how good it would be to get home, right? That's what she was doing before the trigger. She was with a couple of other ladies who was working behind the bar. How was she feeling emotionally? She said she was feeling restless. She was bored. She didn't want to be there. And she was a little bit irritated by one of the women that she was working with, who was a bit of a pain in the ass, right? When asked what perceived value did she believe that alcohol would have in the moment when she had the trigger, she said the perception in the moment was it would be nice just to have one, right? It would be nice just to have one glass of wine. She felt that all the other ladies were drinking very responsibly. And then the old questions start coming up from the resistance is, well, if everybody else can drink responsibly, why can't I just have one, right? She thought that it would taste nice and it would help her relax in a social environment, which she was very uncomfortable being in, okay, because she was the only one not drinking. She also believed it would enhance her enjoyment and she wouldn't feel as isolated. When I asked, well, why is that perceived value an illusion, okay? She says that it's an illusion because there's no such thing as one drink. She would have enough to drink, knowing that she could drive home without being over limit. But once she got home, she knew that she would drink and drink and drink. Okay, and then she would be on that terrible path. So it's an illusion of think I can only just have one drink and I'll be okay, right? Also, the illusion that it would make me feel relaxed and comfortable wouldn't be true, she says. Perhaps right at the beginning, I would kid myself that that was the case. But once I drank the drink, I would feel that I'd made a huge mistake, that it wasn't for me. And I would realize that the environment and the people hadn't changed just because I was drinking a poison. I would also only serve to increase my feelings of isolation. Okay. What could she have done differently? She answers, I could have not volunteered to work in a bar, right? I could have said I wasn't available to do it. And that, from now on, she said, that's something I'm not going to do. She also says, I could have set some boundaries instead of people-pleasing, being too cocky about, being able to handle the situation. How do you feel now? Kim says, I did end up drinking about a week later, but the initial trigger was that moment with the sparkling wine champagne, right? When she came home after the event, she couldn't really remember feeling much of anything, but thinks she just filed it away, and she didn't really do enough work focusing on the actual trigger to dispel the illusion after the event. And even though she didn't drink, she now sees that she should have posted in triggers straight away, which she didn't do. And now, first thing I want to say is, amazing for Kim to post on triggers and to share this, and equally amazing for her to allow us to share it to the wider group as a learning point. The trigger category at Strive is one of the most underused and underused areas, and the most important, in my opinion. And the reason it is underused is because it is very difficult once you have been someone who doesn't drink alcohol for a prolonged period of time, to then drink and then publicly reveal so-called weaknesses or leaks in your system or your emotional state or your person. It's very, you have to be very vulnerable and comfortable with vulnerability. You have to be very courageous and very brave to put this out there and say, hey, this is how I feel. I feel ashamed, I feel guilty, I feel angry, I feel lonely, I feel isolated, I feel stupid, I feel ridiculous, you know, I feel like I let people down. You know, that's tough to do. It's very, very tough to do. It's even tougher to do if I'm asking you to do it again and again and again and again, right? You know, so like posting once is all right, but let's say you post once and then we go through a lot of work together and you're like, yeah, I get it now, but then you do it again the next week. So now you have to post again and do it again the next week. You know, it reminds me a little bit of when I was teaching my boy to ride a bike when he was a nipper. You know, he fell off so many times, and at the end, he just said, "Oh, fuck this! I don't want to ride a bike anymore. I don't want to do it." You know, and sometimes that can happen in Strive. People leave, like, you know, I don't want to do this work. It's too much. Like, it's my ego can't withstand it. My status is dropping too much. Right, all those kind of things that make us run away from being vulnerable. And this is where the work of Brené Brown comes in. You know, and he's exceptionally important. And if you listen to Strive podcast, I would highly recommend that you listen to everything that Brené Brown writes and apply it to your journey to be someone who doesn't drink alcohol, okay? So, you know, had Kim left this race meet and then came straight to Strive and posted straight away in Triggers, and answered these 11 questions, and then had a dialogue with the Strivers about what to do next, or listened to some pointers or some advice, or got their old cogs whirring about how to think about things, then the likelihood that the resistance, let's say resistance is taking the role of Sisyphus, right? This guy who's like continually having to push his boulder up this hill for eternity. Then all of a sudden, like, you know, this ball just starts rolling because resistance has cut his legs off. You know what I mean? It's like posting on Triggers really strengthens. It's like we all get behind Sisyphus and we all kind of help him push the ball up to stop it just rolling away. Because what happens is slowly over time, you'll find that like Triggers, they slowly build up over time. And this fuck it attitude kind of is built up over time, right? It happens, obviously. You're like, fuck it, I want to drink, you just go and have alcohol. But if you've been a Strive for a long time, invariably what happens is a seed will be sown and it will germinate over time through a lack of not attendance on Strive, because you can be attendant and very hollow on Strive, but a lack of doing the work on Strive, I think, is the best way. So Kim is really good at doing the work. But I think she'll be the first one to say that in the build-up to this trigger, she wasn't doing the work, right? She might have popped on Strive every now and then and said, hey, it's Kim, blah, blah, blah. But she wasn't doing the work, right? And doing the work for me is coming on there regularly, talking about your emotional state, talking about your problems, sharing with people, that building that mutual empathy and that mutual trust and helping other people. That to me is doing the work, right? Not coming on and going, hey, I had a really nice day today. Look at this sunflower in my garden. That is also an important part of Strive, because we're building relationships and talking, but it's not necessarily doing the work, okay? So that was Kim's trigger, and that is one of the things that we do on Strive. If you're thinking to yourself, holy shit, I don't want to come on Strive because I don't want to share all that kind of stuff and be shamed in front of people, then don't worry too much. Like, there's people on Strive who have never ever posted in Triggers before in their life. If it ain't your thing and you don't want to do that, then you don't have to. There's no rules on Strive that say you have to always post on Triggers. However, through my personal experience of dealing with this, I will be encouraging you to do it, because I think it is super, super important. Not just super important that you go through the process of writing down your triggers, right? It's the process of what's underneath that, right? It's the process of learning to experience the pain and suffering of vulnerability, learning the pain and suffering of revealing your shame, learning the pain and suffering of sharing your guilt, right? And the benefits of taking on personal responsibility and collective responsibility, right? Not letting yourself down, not letting other people down, that, you know, all that kind of accountability. I think it's hugely important in order for you to become someone who doesn't drink alcohol. And I'm not talking about just the alcohol bit here. I'm talking about if you're regularly posting in triggers and you're getting to the bottom of these things and you're having a philosophical and sometimes scientific debate with people over why you're drinking, that is going to enhance you as a person. It will make you a better wife, a better husband, better mother, better father, better friend, better worker, right? It's bound to, because you're learning to think, all right? You're learning to think. I was talking to my brother-in-law yesterday, and he's a teacher, right? He does design, but he says, I don't teach them design. I teach people how to think. There's far too many people in the world who don't know how to think, and that's what we do at Strive, right? Here's my response to Kim, and I want to go through this so you understand the sort of questions that we'll ask when someone does it. So I've just said, look, you haven't had a trigger in a couple of months and suddenly you see a bottle of wine in a fridge. If for some reason you feel an urge to hide somewhere and drink it, the thought disturbed you so much that you made an excuse and you wanted to leave early, right? So I'm just recapping that point because I think it's important. Then I say that, like, one of the ambassadors, Nikki, she wanted to know what happened after the bar incident, right? So Nikki had replied to Kim and said, look, hey, what happened after the bar incident? I'd like to know, please. But I just put a point in there. I want to know what happened before the event, right? Because the trigger doesn't make sense to me, right? Because usually, I've said here, there's a crescendo that builds up before the bash of the cymbal, okay? Using a musical metaphor there. But what I mean is, when you've been on Strive for a long time and you haven't had a trigger, let alone a drink, you haven't had a trigger for a couple of months, and all of a sudden you open a fridge door at home or the races or wherever it is, and you see a sparkling wine looking at you, it's really unusual, right, for that sparkling wine to be like, come on, pop my cork and put me in your mouth and have a good drink of me, baby, drink me dry. You know, that is unusual, right? What is usual is that in the lead up to seeing this erotic bottle of champagne, lustfully trying to get you to kind of put your mouth all over it, what normally happens in the build up to that is your husband's called you a dick. Your husband's ignoring you. Your kids are shitting all over the floor during potty training. Your boss has tried to have sex with you. Your mates have let you down. The house is a mess and nobody will help you clean it up. You've got no money. You looked in the mirror and you think you look fat, but you can't stop eating donuts. All these things that are going on and on and on. And then you open a fridge and you see this lustful bottle of champagne beckoning you in. And then you have a drink of it, right? That is what normally happens. But that kind of data and information wasn't present in Kim's trigger, right? So I just kind of said to Kim, have a think. What happened before the trigger? And I don't mean like just before, because we cover that in the trigger, don't we? You know, I said in the trigger, what was you doing before the trigger? And Kim says, I was serving drinks, got bored because the crowd was big. I was thinking about how good it would be when I get home. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about what happened in the weeks or the months leading up to the trigger. And whether you choose to focus on weeks or months is up to you. It really does depend on what you're thinking in that moment, right? Really does depend on, you will say to yourself, oh, hang on a minute. I know how long I have to go, how far I have to go back, right? Now, there's a few other things that I said here that I wanted to dissect, okay? Kim says that she doesn't want to be there. She doesn't want to be at the races, right? So I'm saying, is this true, right? Is it true that you don't want to be there? Is a more accurate statement, you didn't want to be serving drinks, okay? So what I mean by that is, maybe she did want to be at the races, but she wanted to be the other side of the bar drinking alcohol. It's not that she did, and this is really important, because as somebody trying to help Kim to get to the bottom of why she's drinking, I think this is a really important point. If she didn't want to be there full stop, then you need to ask, well, why? What is it about this event that I didn't want to be there? Is it the fact that you was working behind a bar? Is it the fact that you were just surrounded by idiots who were drinking alcohol? And that none of that bothered you, so you weren't triggered to have a drink, but you don't want to be around those people? I think that's important to know that. Or is it a real problem to be around people who are drinking? Because you start to feel like the odd one out, because you start to feel isolated, because you start to feel lonely. And then that will then lead to triggers. Like, when you are helping somebody to be someone who doesn't drink alcohol, in this instance, it's really important to differentiate between as to why you don't want to be at an event. So I've asked Kim to think about that, okay? And at some point, hopefully, Kim will then read that and have a think about it and provide us, Strive, with more information on that, and then we can help her further. I've also highlighted the phrase, the sentence that Kim says is, it would be nice to have one. It would be nice to have one, okay? And then I've said underneath that, you said that it would taste nice. But I then said, I think we can safely discard this as a reason. Now, that might sound like a bit strange, or a bit cocky, maybe. Like, you might be thinking, hang on, that's not good, is it? He's telling her how she thinks, right? He's telling her how she thinks. What I'm trying to do here is, what the reason that we drink alcohol and reason why alcoholism is so difficult for us to conquer, right, is because it's vastly complicated, right? The reasons why we drink are so complicated. It's going to be part biology, part psychology, part environment, culture. There's so many different reasons why you're drinking. And because there's so many different reasons, because it's such a convoluted process, resistance thrives on that. It makes you believe that alcoholism is so complicated that you might as well give up and drink like everybody else because you don't have the time and energy to figure this thing out, all right? But a great thing that I learned from David Burns over at Feeling Good podcast is to, one of the things you could do is you can break down this huge, big problem into one bite-sized chunk, okay? So let's say, for example, there are 100 different reasons why you think you might drink and taste is one of them, then isn't your life a lot easier if you only now have 99 reasons why you drink because you've just discarded taste, okay? And what I mean by this is, at Strive, there is nobody who drinks alcohol and struggles to be someone who doesn't drink alcohol because it tastes nice. Let me say that again, just to beat home the point here, okay? Yes, you might think that alcohol tastes nice, but it's not the reason you're addicted to it, is it? It's not. So if we could get a magic wand and we could cure your issues with social isolation, if we could cure your need to fit in, if we could cure your pain, if we could cure your need to numb and all these different things, would you still be coming to Strive? Would you still be paying £40 a month for me to help you because it tastes nice? Like, would you be writing in triggers going, oh my God, I drank again yesterday. I just can't stop drinking because it tastes so nice. Well, no, of course not. That is not the reason that you're addicted to alcohol. It has nothing to do with it. It's a red herring. It's another kind of mine. It's another landmine that resistance throws in there to blow you up, right? So I'm not beating about the bush here because I know, because I've had so many people come through Strive and I helped so many people, that nobody drinks alcohol purely because they like the taste of it and that is why they can't stop, right? It's not the reason. So I've said, let's discard this as a reason. Okay, because as I've said many times before, nobody's on Strive because they're addicted to alcohol because it tastes nice. You could have likely tasted many things that day that tasted equally as nice or better. So unless you want to debate this one some more, I think we could drop this as an issue, right? I'm doing that because I think it will help Kim, because she'll then be able to go, yeah, I think Lee's right here. It's not. I didn't look at that bottle of wine and go, oh, wow, that would taste nice. Yeah, I did, but that's not the reason why I then drank later, right? I haven't got an issue with taste. So let's just knock that out of the way a minute. Now we're that much closer to getting to the root cause of the problem or problems, right? Because we've just cut away a bit of the hedge, so to speak. There's a big hedge in the way of us and reaching our goal of being someone who doesn't have alcohol, and we just chopped a big slice of it off. I've also highlighted here, it would taste nice and help me relax in a social environment which I felt uncomfortable in, being the only one not drinking. So I've highlighted that. And then I've asked, were the women you were serving with drinking? So she wasn't working behind the bar on her own. Were the women with her drinking. Is it that these women you're referring to, is it these women you're referring to when you talk about the environment being uncomfortable? Or are you talking about the race meet in general? Okay, so I've asked, let me say that again. Were the women you were working with drinking? And is it these women you're referring to when you're saying about the environment is uncomfortable? Or are you talking about the race meet in general? What I'm doing there again is I'm trying to get Kim to be more laser-like focused on what the actual problem is, right? Because quite clearly here, she said, it would taste nice and help me relax in a social environment, which I felt uncomfortable because I'm the only one not drinking. So she's now we're getting to the crux of the issue, which is I don't fit in here, right? I don't fit in here. So where is it that you don't fit in? What is the trigger here? Is it the fact that you're a race meet and that everybody's getting fucked off their tits that is a problem? Or is it because you're with these three women who are drinking next to you? What's going on here? Because typically, if you think about it, if you're at a big race meet and you're the only one not drinking, anyone who's been to the races will know that it's a massive piss up, right? So if you go to races and you're the only one not drinking, it's unusual for anybody, especially if you're serving behind a bar, it will be unusual for anybody coming up to have a drink to be making you feel like, you know, ashamed of being someone who doesn't drink alcohol. However, if you're working behind a bar with three people, more intimate, and those people are asking if you want a drink of alcohol and you'll say no, now you may feel socially isolated within that smaller group. And I think understanding whether the smaller intimate group is a problem or whether the bigger issue of being at an event where people are drinking is a problem is something that Kim should really think about. Okay, so that's why I raised that, because I think the answer as to whether it's the wider invite, like going to the races is an issue, because if going to the races is an issue, then going to a pub is an issue, going to a restaurant is an issue, going to a gig is an issue, going to a sporting event is an issue, going to a wedding is an issue. Suddenly, we have a massive problem, because anywhere we go where there's alcohol, we've got a problem. And you know, that is something that really needs to be looked at. But if it's just an isolated incident with these three people and just one person in general was making you feel like out of place or the odd one out, then that is a different thing to think about. So that's why I raised that there. I've also said, compare this with your decision to work there. Okay, you've chosen to work behind the bar where you're serving alcohol to people because you don't feel that it's a threat. But then suddenly it becomes a social environment that you're uncomfortable with because you're the only one not drinking. And I want you to think about this more deeply because the two statements are wildly different. Why would that be? Why would you be saying, I can work here because it ain't a threat, and then suddenly it is a threat and you want to go home because it's a social environment you're uncomfortable with? Like, don't we know that it's a social, don't we? To me, the switch has been flicked too quickly. Like, I can't see how Kim wouldn't know before she went that this is a social environment she would be uncomfortable at. And I think if that is true, that it is something to think about and philosophize over, because now we've got to say to ourselves, okay, if I know that going to the races is going to make me feel uncomfortable and triggered to drink, why am I going, right? And the answer to that question is getting closer to the reason why you're drinking, far closer than I'm drinking because it tastes great, right? Far closer, right? So that is why I'm asking it. Is there something else hidden there? Allowing Kim to think about it and then to talk a little bit more about it. Not like, okay, with the taste, I thrusted it upon her, didn't I? And just said, hey, this is the way you're thinking. But here I'm kind of saying, have a think about it yourself, right? So, you know, at Strive, you know, we can... The other thing as well that's really important, we do color code personality testing at Strive, right? So we can understand what personality type you are, so we can talk to you more aligned with your personality type. And I know Kim is a red, and I'm a red. So we kind of speak the same language. And part of the language of a red is you don't have to fuck about. Like, as a red, you don't really need the empathy that much. You do need it, but you don't need it as much as a blue or a white. What Reds need is someone to say, look, stop fucking about, you're full of shit here, and I'm fucking telling you are. Whereas that would send a white or a blue into meltdown and they would probably leave Strive. With a red, they're more kind of like, oh, fucking hell, he's holding me accountable. I better fucking show up and show this guy that I can fucking do this, you know? Like, that's an important point as well. So my communication, my dialogue style here with Kim is because of that. So I just wanted to mention that as well. Something else I posted here, I pulled out and asked her to think about is, I believed it would enhance my enjoyment and I wouldn't feel isolated. That's what Kim said, right? I believe it wouldn't enhance my enjoyment and I wouldn't feel so isolated. And I've said, can you talk some more about your feelings of isolation? Do you feel this frequently and in what way? Okay, so will we just isolate? Are we just feeling isolated at an event? Have we just rocked up to this... Do we feel like we're connected with the world and our relationships with our partner and our kids and work colleagues is like fantastic and great, and then we go to a race meet where it's full of alcohol and suddenly we feel like disconnected from the world? Like, how true is that? Or are we disconnected from the world anyway? Are we feeling isolated and alone anyway? Like, are we seen and heard in the bedroom? Are we seen and heard in the kitchen? Are we seen and heard in the bathroom? Are we seen and heard in the living room? You know, is what we're doing, being someone that doesn't drink alcohol, is that something that our partner or the people who are most important to us, our family, our mothers, our brothers, our sisters, our children, are they even interested? Do they even know? Do they ever ask us any questions? Do they truly understand the magnitude of what we're going through and what and the change that we're doing? Like becoming someone that doesn't drink alcohol, it's not that it makes you isolated or disconnected. It reveals that you were isolated and disconnected. That's a very important distinction to make, right? So we're just asking Kim here, hey, think about this a little bit more. Was you just isolated at the event, or have you been feeling that way anyway? Because I guarantee you, if you're a human being that is feeling isolated and disconnected from the world, and you have been turning to alcohol, the numb, you know, that issue, the feelings that come up there, you are going to be triggered all the time if you're not working on that, if you're not doing something about that, if you're not fixing that, you're going to be a prime risk to drink, right? So that is a super important question. Also, I highlighted here a sentence that Kim said was, it is an illusion because there's no such thing as one drink. It's an illusion because there's no such thing as one drink. I've said, well, there is such a thing, you know. Had she had that sparkling wine, then that would have been her one drink, right? Can you share how that one drink would have felt? And then juxtapose that feeling against the feeling you have now because you did have a drink. Like, which one is stronger? So I'm interested in, like, I've got, like, you know, I've got a bottle of lime water in front of me. If that was alcohol now and I drunk it consciously, how would it make me feel? You know, if I drunk it consciously and wrote down and had to score it out of 10, with 10 being it tastes like fucking nectar from the gods and 1 it tastes like piss, right? Where would it be? Now, if I drank that drink very mindfully, it's going to be very, very unusual for anyone who loves alcohol to be pitching that anywhere above the 8, 9, 10 range, right? It's going to be a bit lower than that. That's my experience dealing with people, right? I mean, when I drank again after 3 years of not drinking and I questioned myself on it, every time I asked myself, what does it taste like? I was down by the 1. Like, it was like, it tastes like shit. Like, I'm drinking it for different reasons, right? But where is the value here in having this drink? Not just in how it tastes, but how are you feeling? You get so many people, don't you? They say, oh, that first drink, you know, the burning sensation down the throat, the elevated heartbeat, the flushed face, that feeling of, oh, I could do anything in the world. It's almost like someone's describing an orgasm. And I don't know about you, but I drank for the better part of 3 decades and I never once had a drink of alcohol and thought that. Like, if anything, I had a drink of alcohol and I winced and thought, fuck, ugh. I need something else without to take off the edge. not the edge of a buzz, but the edge of the taste. And then, like, after I got through the first pint, I'm so busy either, you know, getting excited about having the next pint or worrying about drinking the next pint because I'm in a round and I'm not keeping up, that I'm no way am I really focusing on the pint, right? Like, this kind of, like, belief that the first drink is, like, so orgasmically great, in my opinion, it's a lie constructed by resistance to keep you hooked, right? It is a lie. It doesn't exist, right? We've been telling ourselves for so long that this first drink is so orgasmic that to turn around now and say that it isn't makes you look like a fucking idiot. And the resistance tells you that because nobody wants to look like a fucking idiot, right? But I don't believe that it's true at all. But let's say you think it is. I'm asking Kim, have a real kind of like real good deep think about that first drink. Like, how did it feel? But now, how does it feel that you had the first drink and now you feel real shit about it? Like, you haven't left Strive. Like, you still want to be someone that doesn't drink alcohol. You've posted in Triggers and you've shared your shame and guilt around all this kind of stuff. So, how do you feel now, right? So, the point here is, people left Strive because they didn't believe that the value that Strive gave them was £40 worth of value. So it wasn't greater than the cost that they were having to spend in order for them to stay with Strive. This is very similar when it comes to drinking, right? I'm asking Kim to think to herself, is the value of drinking that one drink, which she seems to really like and is in her head, right? Is the value of that one drink, is that greater than the pain and suffering that comes after you've had that drink? The answer that Kim is going to get around in her head, if the answer is yes, it is, then she knows she doesn't want to be someone who doesn't drink alcohol. She loves drinking alcohol and she should try to moderate or do whatever she needs to do. But if she comes out the other end thinking, well, no, actually, the value of drinking that one drink is not as great as the pain and suffering that I'm going to have down the long road, and she keeps focusing on that point and she keeps coming back to that point, then slowly is not the word, over time, yeah, she will change and hardwire her neurons that make that connection. And it will be a new connection. And the connection will, like, her connection will change to my connection. So right now she's thinking, when she looks at a bottle of wine, whoa, there's a bottle of wine. I'd love to fucking have a drink of that. That tastes fucking brilliant. And that first one will be the bomb. That's how she's thinking right now. That's how her neurological connections are wired up, right? Over years and years and years and decades of thinking about alcohol. But when I see that bottle of wine when I open it up, I think to myself, what? A fucking bottle of champagne for £150 and some fucking dickhead is going to drink that poison in a minute? What the fuck? I can't believe I was fucking stupid enough to do that. I'm so glad I'm over that shit. Fucking puke. Ugh. That's how I'm thinking. Because my neurological connections have changed. But at one point, they were exactly the same as Kim's, right? I would open that thing up. Fucking champagne. No, what it, for me anyway, when you see a bottle of champagne, expensive, status, wealth, fucking cool, better than, stronger than, ego, fucking class, right? Now, if you're a red like me, who've got a big ego, and that fitting in and having a fixed mindset and wanting to be better than and always like trying to strive for perfectionism, fucking champagne is right down your alley, right? So my memories when it came to champagne were probably like Kim's. It was like, fucking hell, I want to drink that. The bubbles and all that kind of shit is there, right? But over time, by constantly telling yourself a different story, it changes. It changes. And I'm proof of that. And there are plenty of people on Strive that are proof of that as well. So that's why I'm asking her to do that. Then I've highlighted a paragraph. The illusion that it would make me feel relaxed and comfortable wouldn't be true. Perhaps right at the beginning, I would kid myself that was the case. But once I drank the drink, I would feel that I'd made a huge mistake, that this wasn't me. And I would realize that the environment and the people hadn't changed just because I was drinking a poison. I would also only serve to increase my feelings of isolation. I've highlighted that paragraph that Kim wrote, and I've said, how true is this? How true is it? Now, one of the things that can happen on Strive is you, again, it's to do with status. You want to fit in, right? You want to fit in. You want to belong. You don't want to look like a dickhead. Here's Lee spouting on that is this wonderful, great belief system called alcoholism. And that if you believe in it, that you'll never drink alcohol or crave it again. And that alcohol has no value. And you've taken his intensive, you've taken his taster. You've been in a group for a long time. You think you've nailed it, but fuck, you keep wanting a drink. So obviously, I like, you know, am I fucking stupid? Am I just not getting this? Like, fucking, what is going on? So there's the resistance will get you to almost like convince yourself of some untruths. Now, in a way, this isn't bad because faking it until you make it is a known strategy, right? Part of our invisible, violent, dominant belief system philosophy, faking it until you make it, is obviously a big part of that. So it's not like the be all or the end all, but you do have to be very aware about whether or not you're consciously faking it till you make it, or the resistances at work creating some untruths, right? So I've asked, how true is this statement? You know, I wanted to, it's like a bolt, it's like a bullet. I wanted to feel that and go, whoa, what does he mean? How true is this? I wanted to question it. Did this paragraph come from Kim, or did it come from Kim's resistance, right? Because, you know, I've wrote here, you believe drinking that wine will make you more relaxed and help you fit in. But isn't it then true that had you drank, that would have happened? Let me say again. Kim believes that if she drinks the wine or the champagne or whatever, it's going to make her more relaxed and help her fit in. But isn't it true that will happen? If she thinks that's going to happen, won't that happen? Right? So then I'm saying, well, if that's true, maybe a paragraph makes sense in a greater context. Maybe over a period of weeks or months, you realize that this paragraph is true, right? But not in the moment when you're actually drinking. So what I'm saying is, if she is 6 months down the line and she's looking at this trigger, then she could say, well, this illusion, it's the illusion that it would make me feel relaxed and comfortable wouldn't be true. Perhaps right at the beginning, I would kid myself that this was the case. But once I drank the drink, I would feel that I'd made a huge mistake, that it wasn't me. She can see all that in hindsight. But at the time she's drinking, you know, at the time she's drinking, she needs to accept, I think, that, hey, I actually drank this alcohol because I wanted to feel relaxed and because I wanted to fit in, right? Now, she didn't drink it at the time, so we don't really know if she did feel relaxed or she would have felt relaxed or fitted in. And if you're listening to this, Kim, that's an important thing to think about, right? Because if we allow the resistance to tell us that, you know, to create our illusions for us and our perceptions of value and to spot our red herrings, we're going to be completely off base here, right? I think it's much better to be truthful and honest and authentic, okay? For Kim to turn around and say, actually, it was true that I felt relaxed in the moment and it did help me fit in, because now we know where our issues are. We need to help Kim to understand that fitting in is the direct opposite of belonging, and that we want to help Kim to see that because we want to help Kim to belong and feel like she belongs. And then we need to understand why she's not belonging, and we need to kind of create action plans to help her to feel belong like she belongs. And also, I think once she feels like she belongs, whatever, you know, in whatever context that is, then she will feel more relaxed, and then she'll be okay being at an event, right? That is where you have to, you know, do this work, I think. So that is why I want to ask her, like, how true is this statement in the moment? Don't just say, actually, it's an, like Lee's asked me, where is the perception this value is an illusion? I need to find it. Like, if you can't find it, then just write it that you can't find it, that you actually did find it was value. And then let us go for it after that, okay? What could I have done differently? Section. Kim's wrote, I could not have volunteered to work in a bar, right? Now, you might think, that's so fucking obvious. Like, why would anyone trying to be someone who doesn't drink alcohol volunteer to work at a bar, right? Like, it's so obvious. I don't want to focus on the obviousness of it, but I've said to Kim, could you ever see me volunteering to work at a bar? Lee Davey. Could you ever see Lee Davey volunteering to serve alcohol drinks to people? And then I've asked her, what is the difference between you and me? So I would never, ever, ever, in a million fucking years of Sundays, ever volunteer to work at a bar. Ever, ever, ever. Even if it was to fucking save starving people in Africa. I would never volunteer to work at a bar. Kim did. Why? What's the difference? I think there's a very, very important lesson there, right? And then I've said about people pleasing. How often does people pleasing turn up, show up in Kim's life? You know, do we have any examples? Please, Kim, give us some more examples of where people pleasing shows up in your life so we can find the crux of the issue about people pleasing. Because people pleasing is about fitting in, and fitting in is a direct opposite to belonging, and we want to belong. And then finally, boundaries, like Kim mentions boundaries. What are her boundaries? So a good strong boundary would be, hang on, you want me to go and volunteer at a race meet and serve alcohol? You do realize I don't drink alcohol, right? Like, there's a boundary right there. Do they know that Kim doesn't drink alcohol? If they do they know how important it is that Kim doesn't drink alcohol? Do they know that Kim's a member of Strive? Do they know that Kim, like, wants to be a role model to help other people not drink alcohol? Like, these are boundaries, right? I think these are boundaries. So I think these are really important things for Kim to work at. And then I said, now the work starts, Kim. So you don't just post in triggers and hope that, you know, a miraculous thing happens. You post in triggers. You don't just post in there and leave it go. You don't just post in there and if nobody like me comments, just let it go. You post and then you dissect the fuck out of it until you get to the bottom of why you're drinking alcohol. I hope that was really useful for you. If you've enjoyed it, please email me at trooperalcohol.co.uk. I'll speak to the Strivers and I'll ask them for the permission to do some more of these when we don't have any guests on the show. If you want to join Strive and, you know, get this help that I'm showing you now, it's £40 a month, like I said, go to trooperalcohol.co.uk and sign up. If you want to watch me talking about this instead of listening to me, go to our YouTube channel. Just Google Lee Davey YouTube and you'll find me. All right, without further ado, I'm going to shut the hell up. Thank you, Kim, for posting in triggers and being a valued member of Strive. Really appreciate it. Love you tons. And until next week, take care. Okay, what next? So if you've listened to this outro before, stop. You don't have to listen to it again. It's going to be a couple of minutes that will waste your life, I guess. But if you haven't listened to this outro before, then please do spend the next couple of minutes listening to it. Don't fast forward me to Tim Ferriss or Sam Harris or someone else, right? What next? You listen to the Alcohol Addiction Podcast. You're learning quite a lot about the truth about alcohol's philosophy, about Strive's philosophy, about how my mind works and how I became someone that doesn't drink alcohol, right? And podcasts will help. They'll help to increase the cognitive dissonance in your mind, right? And not that what I mean by that is you will start to be questioning whether or not you should be drinking alcohol or not. And that is brilliant. That's great. But the podcast, as essential as they are, will only give you so much. They will only scratch the surface of what your capabilities are or the work that you need to do in order to be someone that doesn't drink alcohol, okay? When I became someone that doesn't drink alcohol in 2009, I quickly set about trying to find the best way of teaching people my experience. Because if you think about it, I had become someone who doesn't drink alcohol very quickly. But then how do you teach people that? Okay. It's taken me 10 years and I'm going to keep getting better and better at it, at cultivating and writing down and expressing my formula, if you like, in what you will see as Strive, okay? And Strive is a family. It's a network of people that have transcended the online realm and are now meeting live and face-to-face, right? Strive is a home where you can feel safe in your vulnerability, knowing that your peers have experienced the same harrowing experiences that you're going through, that the judgment and the shame and the guilt that is poured on you by people who don't understand you doesn't exist, because everybody that you're talking to knows what you're talking about. And I'm talking about building friendships and relationships where you confide in them more than you confide in the person you're married to, or your mum, or your dad, or your kids, or your brothers, or your sisters, or your bestest friends. The depth of conversation and where we go on Strive in the short amount of time is amazing. And it is creating some really strong and some beautiful relationships. In addition to that core support unit, because as I'll always say, we drank alone. We certainly shouldn't try to quit alone. You know, we need that support framework. Aligned to that support framework is our weekly online meetings. So we meet up in Australia, we meet up in North America, we meet up in Europe, and we meet up online and we have a good laugh and we, you know, we seek support if we need it or we just talk about our day, but we're talking in a safe environment, right? And we're also starting to branch out and meet each other live. We haven't set up any major live events yet, but, you know, only in the last couple of months I've been to Las Vegas to meet Holly. We had a dinner in Birmingham where six or seven Strivers got together. I know in Australia, Kim and Glynis got together. Stella's been flying around the world, seeing, like, Nikki in New Zealand. And she's been to America and seen Lisa. So that is happening as well, which is super important. We also have over 130 coaching videos, the taster, the intensive, all designed to help you become someone who doesn't drink alcohol whilst being supported by your peer group. But most importantly, a small select band of ambassadors who used to be people who had problems with alcohol, who were kind of stifled and stuck in the quicksand of alcoholism, who came through this process and are now ambassadors, right? They are now helping other people like you to get through these things. And we're going to keep growing. We are going to invite specialists in to help you with your counseling, to help you with your trauma, to help teach you cognitive behavioral therapy techniques. We're going to get people in creating training courses. We're going to have collaborations with other companies. For example, we have a collaboration with Sam Harris and the Waking Up app. So you can, if you join Strive, you get a free 30-day membership of the Waking Up meditations, and money off is lifetime deal. We've got relationship with Nick Littlehales, the sleeping coach, where you can get money off his products to help you sleep better, which is always an issue when you become someone who doesn't drink alcohol. So Strive is growing and growing and growing. It's a monthly subscription. You can quit whenever you like. It costs £40. The way that I measure that up is when I was drinking on a Friday, I would go to the off license and I would buy three bottles of wine for a tenner, right? So if I do that in a month, there you are, I've got myself £40. If I just stop buying those three bottles of wine for a tenner. But if you're anything like me, you're actually spending between £100 and £200 a weekend on alcohol. If you become someone who doesn't drink alcohol, you're going to be saving thousands a year. We're talking about £40 a month. Also, if you find that you're saying to yourself, I don't want to pay £40 a month, it's too much, then you really have to reconsider the priority of being someone who doesn't drink alcohol. Maybe this isn't the right time for you. Because if you want to be someone who doesn't drink alcohol, if you're really serious about it, £40 a month shouldn't be scaring you off, right? And it's important that I say that. I always remember when I joined the Jack Canfield Success Principles coaching course back in 2009. I was £30,000 in debt, and I rung this helpline, and the woman on the other line wanted me to pay something like £2,500 to £3,000, and I didn't have the money. And she said to me, if you can't find the money, £3,000 to change your life, maybe this isn't for you. And I was like, fucking hell, she's right. So I put another £3,000 on top of the £30,000 I had on my credit card. I had £33,000 in debt. And I can tell you within the 12 months, I'd paid all that off. So look at this as an investment. This isn't a doodad, as Robert Kiyosaki says over Rich Dad, Poor Dad. This is an investment. It is an investment in your education. Because when you become someone that doesn't drink alcohol, Strive isn't about helping you to reach that goal. It's not about helping you to be someone who doesn't drink alcohol. When we become people that doesn't drink alcohol, our biggest challenge is reasserting ourselves back into society. Our biggest challenge is filling our white space with meaning and purpose. Our biggest challenge is finding fulfillment in our relationships and our life. That is what Strive's about. And if you are interested in those things, if you're interested about filling the white space, meaning and purpose, living a wonderful life and achieving your dreams instead of just talking about them, then you need to be in something like this long term. You know, we interviewed James and Janice Prochaska, and they were saying, weren't they, that the phase, maintenance phase that you go through when you're going through recovering from addiction takes anywhere up to 5 years. Please don't take the taste or the intensive or join for a month, stop drinking and think you've nailed it. Hang around for a long time, cultivate these relationships, and most importantly, have a lot of fun. If you're interested in joining Strive, then go to www.thetruthaboutalcohol.co.uk and you can sign up there. Alternatively, you can email me at truthaboutalcohol@gmail.com and I'll answer any questions that you've got. Until then, take care. Thank you, as always, for listening to the Alcohol Addiction Podcast. And if you want to watch the Alcohol Addiction Podcast, then Google Lee Davey YouTube and you'll find all the videos for all of our interviews up on the site. Thanks for listening.